Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, your host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report Podcast, and today is April the 10th, 2024. It has been 3,726 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 50 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 47 days since Russia expanded its war of aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened on Tuesday and Wednesday morning. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. There are map updates today. The Russia-Ukraine War Report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine Morning Reports, operational commands north, south and east of Ukraine, open-source intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian male bloggers and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission – the truth. Because the truth matters. Here is my daily assessment. 1. United States House Speaker Mike Johnson has clearly signaled he will not advance any aid package for Ukraine to a vote, and we maintain that military aid to Ukraine has ended unless there is a change in political leadership. 2. In our assessment, without the restoration of air defense, Ukrainian troops will be forced to continue to withdraw from areas the Russian aerospace forces target for intense bombardment. 3. Based on multiple reports that the United States has set multiple restrictions on what military equipment can be provided and how it can be used due to a misguided fear of a Russian tactical nuclear strike, the world is caught in the mutually assured destruction and stability paradox. 4. Russian forces are setting conditions to capture Chasiv Yar regardless of cost. 5. Russia is also setting conditions in two additional operational areas for future wider attacks, but we continue to question how much combat potential will be available to expand current operations this summer. 6. Russia's trampling of international humanitarian law has been accelerating since March the 22nd. In our assessment, the willful ignoring of blatant Russian war crimes by international watchdogs will continue to encourage escalation. 7. The disjointed response to Russian aggression by Ukraine's allies continues to embolden Moscow, leading to the most serious airspace violation of a NATO country since Russia expanded its war of aggression on February 24, 2022. We maintain that the inaction by the United States and the excessively risk-averse rules of engagement forced on the NATO alliance are creating an environment ripe for a serious international incident. 8. The continued attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure have incrementally increased the chance of an intentional nuclear accident at multiple nuclear facilities in Ukraine, and the situation is more serious than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. 9. In our assessment, the continued drone strikes on the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant are Russian false flag operations to deter continued Western assistance, as Ukraine derives no military or geopolitical benefits from the attacks, but Russia does. We start today's report in the Donbas, starting in northeast Donetsk Oblast. In the Siversk area of Operation Oryo, Russian forces continued their attempts to advance in the direction of Verkhnyokamenskoye without success. There weren't any corroborating Russian reports of fighting in the area, strongly suggesting this is positional fighting, reconnaissance, or reconnaissance in force. In the Soledar area, it was a similar situation, with Russian troops making another attempt to advance in the direction of Rozdolivka. The heaviest fighting in Ukraine was in the Kostyantynivka AO, with 25 of the 66 Russian-initiated ground attacks in this area. Fighting continued in Bogdanivka, with neither combatant reporting a change in territorial control. NASAFI information for resource management systems indicated that the area occupied by Russian troops in southern Bogdanivka and the southern approaches to the settlement from the T-506 highway were under heavy artillery fire. The same satellite intelligence showed that Russian artillery and bombing from the VKS, Russian aerospace forces, were targeting the eastern tip of Chasiv Yar and the center of the settlement. Operational Command East reported that Russian tactics were unchanged, but, quote, there are no occupation forces of the Russian Federation in the city and its surroundings. Fighting continued north of and in Ivanivske, with no change in the situation. Heavy positional fighting also continued in the areas of Klishivka and Andriivka. Russia targeted residential areas in Kostyantynivka, killing one and wounding three. At the time of publication, two people were still missing. In southwest Donetsk Oblast, the intensity of fighting remains reduced in the Avdiivka AO, but will almost certainly increase in the next 2 to 5 days. The Russian Ministry of Defense, Armored, reported there was fighting in the area of Novobakhmutivka. Russian assaults on Berdychi were unsupported by armor, resulting in heavy losses and new territorial gains. Russian Milblogger Vogonza added some more confirmation to our assessment from Tuesday that Ukrainian forces had counterattacked from Semenivka. Russian forces continued their attempts to advance on Umanske from the south and the east. The People's Militia of the Donetsk People's Republic claimed that elements of the Russian First Army Corps captured Pervomayske and raised a flag in the southwestern part of the settlement. This is near the same area where Russian ground forces were seen on the eastern edge of Netailove over the weekend. The Ukrainian source Deep State declared the settlement captured, and Vogonzo echoed the report from the illegitimate Donetsk People's Republic, DNR. No Russian troops were visible, and another building with a flag on it was on fire and partially destroyed. We adjusted the map, but left the gray area unchanged. Yesterday, we shared the video of the Russian T-72 Turtle tank at a Russian barracks and logistics point. The site was geolocated by Ukrainian forces in the residential area of the Petrovsky district of occupied Donetsk, 100 meters from civilian housing. You know where this is going. After the attack on Krasnohorivka, the T-72 returned to the same location. Due to bad operational security, the former bus storage lot turned military base was hit by rockets fired by HIMARS, destroying the site, including the turtle tank. We link to a video in our daily situation report, and there is more information in the podcast description. In occupied Yenakiyeva, a Fab-1500 bomb fell off a Russian airplane, crashing through the roof of a grocery store. The bomb didn't come, but the incident is among dozens of bombs that have fallen off of Russian aircraft in the last month. 27 of the 66 Russian ground attacks were in the Vuhledar AO. There was significant fighting in the area of Krasnohorivka, with conflicting information. Ukrainian source Deep State reported that Russian troops were pushed out of the southeastern edge of the settlement, while the Ukrainian 46th Air Assault Brigade reported fighting continued. Armored released a video claiming there was a successful assault from the south. The video was from the same failed attack from March the 17th, just recorded from a different angle. We left the map unchanged. Russian forces continued positional fighting east of Georgievka and southwest of Pobeda, with no change in the situation. Heavy fighting continued in the center of Novomikhailivka and to the south, with no significant changes. Russian troops also tried to advance in the direction of Vodyane from Solotke, without success. Russian forces continued their subordinate attacks in the Staromlinivka AO. Russian troops tried to advance on Urozhaine from the south and made another attempt to advance between Rivnopil and Staromayorske in the direction of Velika Novosilka, without success. In Zaporizhzhia Oblast, positional fighting in the Orikhiv AO continued, with fighting north of Verbove and the southern edge of Robotyne. Ukraine has also demanded a meeting with the International Atomic Energy Agency IAEA board after another very likely false flag drone attack on the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, ZNPP. The board will meet on Thursday. The IAEA team monitors reported that a drone struck the roof of the ZNPP training center, located outside the power plant complex. Director General Rafael Grossi said the training center is 500 meters from Reactor 1 and, quote, the incident did not pose any threat to nuclear safety and security. the IAEA team requested immediate access to inspect possible damage, with Russian occupiers refusing, citing the, quote, military security situation. Grossi did not assess blame, stating, quote, whoever is behind them, they are playing with fire. Attacking a nuclear power plant is extremely irresponsible and dangerous, and it must stop. Russian occupiers are now claiming the plant was attacked multiple times last week. Grossi added, quote, in all cases, the IAEA team requested to visit these locations, but were denied access due to security reasons. The United States Department of State spokesperson Matthew Miller warned Russia to stop, quote, playing a very dangerous game with its military seizure of Ukraine's nuclear power plant. The sound of outgoing artillery fire near the plant continued. The IAEA plans to brief the UN Security Council next week. Energoatom issued a statement denying the Russian claims, calling them Moscow propaganda and false statements meant to sway public opinion. Russia continued its attacks on Odessa, launching 14 Shahed 136 one-way drones at civilian infrastructure and the ports. Early in the day, two KH-59 air-to-surface guided missiles were shot down, with debris landing on an energy facility and a port logistics and transit hub. Two people were wounded. An Iskander-M struck in the coastal recreation area, with no injuries reported. Resort towns like Zatoka were almost destroyed in 2022. Here's what's happened in northern and northeastern Ukraine. Armored released a video showing a military installation near Okhtyrka in Sumy Oblast hit by a cruise missile, striking 32 D-20 Taut howitzers. A catastrophe? Not so fast. Satellite images show that the Cold War-era howitzers were parked at the base between 2015 and 2017 and have never moved. Further, in March of 2022, Okhtyrka, along with the base, was occupied by Russian troops. So, Russia hid useless equipment for a propaganda video? Not so fast. Yes, this was a propaganda video, but in our assessment, the old D-20s could have been used as decoys on the battlefield. Here is my theater-wide update. On the night of April the 9th and the 10th, Ukrainian air defenses shot down 14 of 17 Shahed 136 one-way drones launched by Russia. People's deputy Oleksiy Goncharenko announced that the draft law on mobilization would be brought to the floor of the Verkhovna Rada for debate. The update will require those found to be unfit or with limited fitness for military service to be re-examined within 12 months. Certain service members will get a 10,000 hryvnia pay increase, while those who engage in frontline combat in Ukraine or Russia will get 70,000. Men from 18 to 60 seeking consular services from Ukrainian embassies will have to produce military registration documents, and those who don't register can have their driver licenses suspended. If passed, the new law will go into effect 30 days later. The issue of demobilization for those who have provided extended service, have disabilities, or are former prisoners of war will be considered in a separate measure. After an initial investigation into the harassment of a journalist who was investigating corruption within the Security Service of Ukraine, SBU, two people were reassigned to the front lines. The head of the Department of Counterintelligence Protection of State Interests in the field of information security, Ilya Vitiuk, was demoted and sent to a combat unit. Additionally, the head of the Solominsky District Military Enlistment Office in Kyiv, who was unnamed, was demoted and sent to a different frontline unit. In a press release, the Ministry of Defense of Ukraine stated, quote, "The armed forces of Ukraine adhere to the principles of openness and transparency in their activities and emphasize the importance of the media and the public working together to protect the rights and freedoms of every citizen of Ukraine." The commanders of Operational Command South and West, Andriy Kovalchuk and Sergei Litvinov, were relieved of duty. Colonel Shapovalov, the former commander of the Ukrainian 59th Brigade, was named the commander of Operational Command South. Brigadier General Shvedyuk was named the commander of Operational Command West. The U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, while testifying to Congress, said that Ukraine should refrain from attacking Russian oil refineries.
Certainly, those attacks could have a knock-on effect in terms of the global energy situation. But quite frankly, I think Ukraine is better served in going after tactical and operational targets that can directly influence the current fight.
So.
During the same hearing, Senator Angus King asked Austin about Russian disinformation and influence campaigns, including those targeting congressional leaders.
In the late 1930s, there was a very deliberate and sophisticated Nazi propaganda effort in the United States, up to and including members of Congress, to affect American opinion and political opinion toward the Nazi regime and the defense of Europe. And it worked until Pearl Harbor. Today, Chairman McCaul and Chairman Turner in the House have both acknowledged a very sophisticated and concentrated Russian misinformation and propaganda attempt here in the United States to affect our public policy toward Ukraine. And indeed, both of them acknowledge that this has up to and including members of Congress. Do you see, Mr. Secretary, a danger to this country from this kind of concerted, conscious misinformation campaign on the part of the Russians?
Absolutely, Senator. And that danger increases on a daily basis.
The Wall Street Journal reported that SpaceX was no longer geofencing Starlink terminals in any of the occupied territories, including Crimea, as the illegal trade in the sanction-blocked satellite internet systems booms. The ongoing investigation found that terrorist organizations, drug cartels, and hostile nations can easily buy, register, and use the terminals. The president of Raytheon Land and Air Defense Systems, Thomas Laliberty, said that the company can build one full Patriot battery per month, and they are currently underutilized. A battery includes the radar, command and communications unit, and between 6 to 8 launchers. Currently, the company only has 5 firm orders from Switzerland and expects 12 more over the next 18 months. In the biggest indication that Speaker of the House Mike Johnson has no intention of ever advancing a military aid package to a vote, the Speaker refused to meet with the Secretary of State for Foreign Affairs for the United Kingdom, Lord David Cameron, after he traveled specifically to the United States to discuss Ukrainian aid with the House leader. The UK Foreign Ministry said that efforts to lock down a time were, quote, rebuffed by Johnson's office. The European Commission is still discussing how to use the interest income from up to 207 billion euros of frozen Russian assets to support Ukraine. The latest proposal would allocate 90% of the funds, approximately 4 billion euros, for military aid. During his swearing-in ceremony, the new Minister of Defense of Bulgaria, Atanas Zapryanov, vowed to speed up military aid to Ukraine. The European Union is sending 157 generators to Ukraine, including 2 capable of producing 1 megawatt, to help stabilize the electrical grid. Germany announced it would transfer another 20 modern infantry fighting vehicles to Ukraine by the end of 2024. The U.S. transferred the cargo from 4 seized Iranian ships to Ukraine, including 5,000 AK-47 rifles, machine guns, sniper rifles, RPG-7 anti-tank grenades and launchers, and over 500,000 rounds of small arms ammunition. The intercepted cargo was from the IRGC and was meant to support Houthi rebels in Yemen. The U.S. State Department authorized the sale of $138 million in parts and maintenance equipment for the Hawk air defense system. The parts will be sourced from existing inventory, third-party countries, dual-use components, and new production. And that's what we know. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history. and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.